that really hooked me. That was right at the end of my studies there, and that really hooked me into that trajectory, that kind of arts administration, curating, working with artists, working with art.
This is Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. Each show will focus on how someone uses their unique talent to create something from nothing. I'm Justin Lewis. On today's episode, I am talking with Stacy Reason at the Yeiser Art Center, where she is curator and director. We will discuss what led her to curating, what makes it an art, and her personal artistic endeavors. So tell me more about how you became interested in the arts.
Well, I always had a creative inclination. And when I remember my first drawing when I was, I think, 5 or 6 years old. And I was drawing with a picture of my cat with some colored pencils. I remember thinking I should draw the bottom of his paw because you can slightly see it, so it'll make it look more 3D. And I was so proud of that observation and realization and application to the drawing at such a young age that it was something that really motivated me to continue looking and observing and practicing that kind of craft. And it was always, you know, I've always been in some kind of creative field. And at some point I remember my parents asking me, you know, well, what do you want for your birthday? Do you want this, this, or this, or do you want art supplies? And it always, or kind of gradually became always art supplies.
Is your family artistically inclined?
Well, my entire family are music people. We're all band geeks, so we all did marching bands. I was in drumline, and I did, you know, concert bands and marching bands, and all three of my sisters, all four of us, and my mom and dad, all of us were band kind of nerds. So, you know, there was always that creativity, that arts centered in our household, or it was present. But as far as visual arts, I'm the only one kind of in my family that practiced and studied art in visual art.
Sounds like your parents were very supportive of you pursuing the arts, visual arts, because of buying the art supplies and different things like that.
Yeah, I mean, younger growing up, they were very supportive in allowing me to do something that brought real joy. And when I got older and, you know, I presented the conversation to my parents that I wanted to study art, I think they were a little more trepid about supporting that, only because, you know, they had much more traditional degrees and, you know, traditionally applicable degrees. And, you know, there's that, well, what are you going to do with that kind of attitude? So it was definitely some trepidation, but they supported me getting higher education and pursuing things that made me joyful, and also could tell that I was really dedicated and spent a lot of time in mastering skills and learning more. So even though they didn't quite understand or maybe see the applicable career value towards the degree, they were always completely supportive of me pursuing that education.
I guess this is a good time to bring up that education. You were a racer.
Yeah,
I was a racer myself. Go on a little more detail about your educational background.
I really pride my time at Murray State because the art department is such a special part of Murray State because there are just some amazing professors, many of which are still there. So I'm really happy to be in such close proximity to some of the people I just so highly respect and that motivated me to really work hard and supported my crazy ideas. The gallery director at the time, Becky Alley, really saw the interest that I had in curating. My degree at Murray State was Bachelor's of Fine Art. So it was a studio artist. So I was making a lot of art and I was studying art for the application of making it in my own personal research. At the time was really interested in water conservation. So I was making activist art. Art that was used to communicate a message and support whatever cause that I was interested in. So I saw this research grant opportunity, which is structured to give a student an opportunity to have resources available to them to further research in their field of interest. So I was interested in activist art, and I wanted to learn more about other artists using art as activism. Hmm. So when we found out we received the grant, I put out a national call for art, specifically anyone who was in school, so either an undergraduate BFA student or a graduate student, anyone who was also studying, so it was important that they were also in my position, that was making art for the purpose of activism, so activist art. It was a really amazing turnout. There were a lot of responses, and I think that we whittled it down to 55 artists, 41 states, something like that. It was just a really widespread reach. So it was a truly national exhibition of activist art. I worked with Becky Alley to curate the exhibition. So, you know, through that one-on-one, I got to practice making decisions about why I want to choose certain works of art and how those works of art communicate together within the context of one exhibition. And that's where curating to me is really interesting, because putting together exhibitions, especially group exhibitions, what I think is exactly parallel to the studio artist practice. And that's why I applied to the program at U of L, which was a dual master's program. So I was able to get two masters at the same time. One was a master's of arts in curatorial studies, which also looked a lot like a museum studies master's. And then the other one was in public administration. And I chose to focus on nonprofit management, because, of course, most art galleries, art museums, art programming is in that realm. So it was really a perfect opportunity for me to bridge these two kinds of passions.
And curating is something that I never really thought about as an art form so much. One of the reasons why I wanted to interview you was to learn more about that process.
In my perspective, and from the work that I've done, both in the studio when I'm making art and when I'm working in a gallery, as far as curating or even just managing exhibitions, there's a decision process that has to be made that I find really similar. So there's an interest in a topic. There is research that's done. You have to accomplish communicating an idea. I think that that happens both in the studio when someone has to make decisions about what material am I going to use? What does that say about what I'm trying to communicate? How, when I put two colors next to each other, what emotion or what field of depth of perception does it create? You know, all those decisions that you have to make, I think that you can and do make the same decisions when you're curating an exhibition. So instead of dealing with, am I going to use wool or am I going to use cotton, you're dealing with, am I going to use this artist or this artist, and am I going to use this artwork or this artwork? And when I put these two artworks together in this sequence, what does that evoke? What message does that tell? And they're very, very subtle things. And as a curator, it's something that I really enjoy kind of analyzing when I go to other art shows is, you know, they put this artwork next to this artwork, and this was kind of around a corner. So you have to, you know, it's very kind of theatrical. You have to make these decisions. Well, if I'm a viewer and this is the first time I'm entering the gallery and this is the first work I see, and then I walk to around the corner and this is the next work I see, like, what does that sequencing mean? Like, where is this kind of narrative that you're trying to make? And then how does everything work all together in concert? So those decisions are very similar to what a studio artist makes when they're making a painting or a drawing or a sculpture. To me, they're all the same decisions. And I consciously think that way when I curate. And it's a very, very real parallel for me.
I see you as somebody that just loves collaboration. Mm-hmm. And it's like that has to be a trait of a curator, because that's naturally part of it, is you're bringing in people as a collaboration. Where do you think that part of you comes from?
Well, I am an extrovert and I need people around me in order to work. I don't work well alone. And I think that I just really enjoy working together with people. I find that I learn a lot about myself, about how I work and about what I'm interested in by learning about how other people work and what they're interested in. I just think that I'm just really passionate about this idea that nothing really happens in silos and everything is, of course, interconnected. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that, you know, my master's thesis exhibition was about this kind of art of curating and how it parallels the studio practice. And it happened in two parts. And there's another project that I did, another studio project that I organized that paired two groups of artists. One was a really young group of artists that I was one of the founders of, called the Louisville Artist Syndicate. And the other one was this older group of artists called the Artist Breakfast Club, because they met every week for breakfast and they talked about art stuff and they'd been meeting for like 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the Louisville Syndicate was this brand new group of people that said, hey, there are so many young Louisville artists, you know, what can we do together that can create opportunities for ourselves? And so I took those two groups and I said, let's do a drawing project or an art project. And they each of those groups started something, a piece of art, and then they gave them all to me. And then I blindly matched them to the other group. So one person from the Artist Breakfast Club got an artwork that was started by someone from the syndicate and vice versa. But neither of them knew who started it or what their intentions were or what their ideas were. And the challenge was to finish it. The exhibition of it was held in a gallery in Louisville. It was such an interesting exhibition because it started conversation and it started these relationships and it built bridges between these two, you know, one really brand new group and one really established powerhouse artist group in Louisville. And it was such a special kind of collaborative project to direct. So I had another interview with a friend of mine, and, you know, I never realized, and it's funny that you pick up on this too, but I never realized that about myself, that I actually really like working together with people. And he also made this point that because my thesis show was in two parts, and this was kind of in two parts, that I really like working in this kind of like dualities area with these, mm-hmm. you know, kind of opposites, or just seeing what the relationship is with two different points. It's really something that I'm interested in, and yeah, it's funny that you also pick up on that.
Well, let's talk about your personal art. Even though you enjoy collaborating and you curate, you're also an artist in your own right. Tell me about what kind of art that you like to do.
I had studied drawing with a little bit of printmaking and a little bit of photography and a little bit of book binding. So my kind of studio practice is really all over the place, but mostly it's 2D. I actually make this kind of reference about my bookmaking practice because to me, bookmaking is a 2D art because everything, every step of it is in two dimension. Like all the pages are flat, the covers are flat, the fabric that you cover, the book cover is flat. Everything is flat until you assemble it all. And that's kind of like, I'm apparently really terrified of the third dimension when it comes to art making. So bookmaking is my, that's how I trick myself into working in 3D. But lately, I spent some time in Mexico between Louisville and here. I was in Mexico. I was living in a neighborhood that is called a fraccionamiento. They are these basically kind of subdivisions that developers come in and they make these subdivisions that are like these little gated communities, and they're like these little pockets of kind of fabricated paradise. And I thought it was really strange to live inside of this manicured setting where all the landscaping was really perfect, and then you drive out of it and it's just total chaos. And they don't try to hide that at all. I mean, it's just as soon as you exit, it's just like total chaos. I always thought that, you know, it was also interesting because the people that come in there into the fraccionamiento to work in there to maintain it, to maintain that glorified look, that perfect utopian look, are people that drive from an hour. They live on farms. They live in small villages. They come into this beautiful place and they like perfectly manicure it. And I just, that a juxtaposition between, you know, that kind of disconnect between where these neighborhoods were located and the people that worked to maintain these neighborhoods was really something that I couldn't let go. It was something I was really interested in. So I started making these fiber works, which is also something that I never had incorporated into my studio practice. Embroidery is a huge heritage craft of Mexico. I mean, there's just, for just generations, this just lovely, beautiful, color-rich embroidery. And so I went to these traditional markets and I bought from there just fabric and thread and these really janky needles that they just make by, like, with scraps of metal. I mean, it's just, it was really fun to go there and just find everything that they would normally use to sit and embroider these, like, the beautiful flowers on the dresses and everything. Mm-hmm. And then that's what I used to make this art, because I was really wanting to parallel that, you know, these people that are living these traditional Mexican lifestyles, you know, doing this crafts, are coming into this setting and making these beautiful things. So I started this series of landscape where I was making drawings and watercolors of the really intricate flowers on this fabric and then using needle and thread to go back over and do some embroidery over it. So it's kind of this juxtaposition between this perfectly manicured, idealist lifestyle and the materials and application of traditional Mexican culture.
The hard part of doing a podcast with artists is I get to see the art, but the people listening to this do not get to see it in the same way. However, we have social media, thankfully, these days, and the internet, so that people can see. So I'll put up some of the art. Let's talk about the Yeiser Center, where you are now curator.
The Yeiser Art Center has been around since 1957. So we're in our 60th year here. And that has a lot to say about something in Western Kentucky being here for so many long-running years. Yeah. It was renamed in the late 80s after Mary Yeiser, who was one of the founding artists, that just said, Paducah's this awesome place. We have some artists. Let's come together and create a place for art, for other people to see art. Mm-hmm. And the Yeiser has always been that. It's always been about education of art. It's always been about accessibility to art. It definitely is something that is way bigger than what a lot of people realize. We have a permanent collection of over 300 artworks. And within that permanent collection, we have a lot of work from local artists, but we also have some Salvador Dali prints. We have some America Sought painting. We have an Alexander Calder painting. We just have so many just amazing gems that major institutions have the same or similar things. We have a Matisse drawing. We have a Picasso drawing. I mean, it's just really amazing that we have this stuff here. Yeah. So it really is Paducah's best kept secret, and I'm definitely trying to bring it out of its shell.
So, Stacy, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Something from Nothing. I want to close the show with this question. If you could have any piece of art in the world as a part of the permanent collection for the Yeiser Art Center in Paducah, Kentucky, which piece of art would that be?
Oh, my gosh. That's, like, the hardest question in the world. Well, because I have such an interest in how art can work and the process of art and collaboration, I think I would want some works that by probably Mel Chin, who does these really amazing projects where he goes into communities and really immerses himself in them and creates these artworks to try to expose some kind of issue or community. I think that by having a piece like that, that was really would be more like evidence of an action and less of a static artwork, because a lot of kind of activist arts and socially engaged artists go into communities and they do projects, and then there's kind of the evidence left over of that project, and that becomes the kind of the artwork. Mm-hmm. I think having objects like that would be really interesting to really show the kind of diversity of how art can work and the processes that happen. And of course, it embraces collaboration, and it embraces community, and embraces public art, and then honors this kind of lineage of kind of art institutions.
I love that answer. If it was me, I would have been like the Mona Lisa, so everybody would come to my store. But you gave this thoughtful answer about what you would want to communicate through the arts, so that says a lot about you. Thanks again for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure.
You can learn more about the Yeiser on our Facebook page, Something from Nothing. You'll also be able to see pictures of some of the art that Stacy has created. This has been Something from Nothing, a podcast about the creative process and the individuals involved. I'm Justin Lewis. Thanks for listening.